Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. I'm your host, Emily Francis, and we have the fabulous producer, Jay, on the line with us, who is responsible for making this show go round. I know you guys don't get to hear him, but he is with us, and I'm always grateful, and I do not like to begin without making sure that he knows that I am incredibly grateful that he's here. I am here in Malta, beautiful, sunny, ridiculously hot, sunny Malta. It's already gotten up to 85 degrees this week, Fahrenheit, 31-ish Celsius, and it's put Malta in a little bit of a fear for what this summer is going to bring, because we've already gotten rid of the rain. It's really, really dry already and getting hot in a way that's a little bit concerning. I hope you guys are safe and sound where you are and that you received some good rain. Today, we pre-record, so this is going to air next week, but today is the Feast of St. Gregory here in Malta, which happens the first Wednesday following Easter Sunday, and it kicks off the swimming season. And we went today for the first time. I brought my whole family. I wanted everybody to see, and it was incredible to witness, and we watched all these people jump off these high cliffs into the sea. It was completely nuts, but amazing, and we took a great boat ride all around the open sea, and What a wonderful day before we come here and have an amazing conversation. Today's guest is Alan Pierce, and he wrote a book with his wife, Alan and Beverly Pierce. They wrote the book Coma and Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. I jumped on having Alan on this show because this is a conversation that I am incredibly fascinated with and have read so many books on this particular subject because I'm fully enthralled with the whole near-death experience, afterlife experience, all the different studies of the way that we view death around the world. So let's jump in. Alan, welcome to All About Healing. Thanks for being here.
Emily, thank you. I'm going to say I envy your weather. Here in France, it's wet, very, very wet.
And are you in what part of France?
We're in an area called the Charente, which is sort of central-ish, down to the left a bit. Generally you get lovely weather, but it hasn't stopped raining since November.
Oh, wow. Rain is very necessary, but yeah, it's weird. Here in Malta, when it rains, because it goes so long without it, the oil from the cars, it becomes really slick. And you have to drive very, very carefully because the roads get really oily and slippery. And now I kind of miss it because it's really dry already and it's a little early to stop the rain. But I'm grateful. And here we are from Europe doing this show out of California. I mean, isn't this incredible what we do now with technology?
It is, because it was actually through technology, through the internet, that I was able to do this book. I mean, we can talk about the whys and wherefores of it in a minute, but we came up with the notion that we should be investigating what happens to people within coma at the early stages of the COVID outbreak. And I'm a journalist. My wife, B, is a PI, private investigator. And I think, like a lot of people, we were at loose end. We didn't have much to do. We were watching a lot of TV news. And I was just wondering why so many people with COVID were being placed into medically induced comas. How does that work? That's great. I just wanted to know how that works. So I looked into it. And in essence, prolonged deep sedation and intensive care, coma, it's been an essential tool of critical care for the past 50 years. It enables a deep restorative form of sleep. And there should be no events within coma. It should be in complete blank. none of this turns out to be true. And I think because we had time on our hands, I spent more time looking at something. Once I get my teeth into something, I do tend to sort of keep chewing until I get a result. And eventually, I started talking to coma survivors. It took a while to find them. And everything they had to tell me was at odds with what the doctors were telling me. And one of the most striking things that I discovered was that almost everyone I was talking to who'd survived a coma was suffering the same set of symptoms, regardless of what put them into the coma in the first place. The biggest amongst these was memory, giant gaps in their memory, terrible, terrible aches and pains, full-on post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, with flashbacks, the fear of going out and all the rest of it. And this was within the first few days that we discovered this. And I realized, I thought, well, we've perhaps got an article we should be writing. But as I got to know the coma survivors, and they started to tell me their stories, I realized we were into something so much bigger than I ever imagined, because we also discovered that whilst putting people into a coma has been an essential tool of critical care for the past 50 years, it is massively overused. There are a handful of cases where it is generally agreed you can put someone into a coma. They are. If someone's having a brain seizure, you need to switch off the brain to prevent further damage, so it goes. The thing is, you only do that for minutes or possibly hours at the maximum, not for weeks or months. If someone's got certain types of injuries, such as abdominal, you don't need them moving around, you will sedate them deeply. People suffering from certain complications post-heart operation will often be placed into a coma because the brain uses a lot of oxygen and they want to divert that to the heart. Outside of that, there should be no reason to place anyone into a coma. So when COVID came along, and everyone has been put into comas, they're doing it because they simply did not know what to do. On one level, they were overwhelmed. As one nurse told me, it was like, you know, being in a completely different country with no roadmap. We just didn't know where to go. And people were dying. And they thought the best thing we can do is to knock them out, let the body rest, and let the drugs and nature do what they can. But it turns out that they've caused far more damage than good. And when I say it turns out, because of the sheer scale of COVID, because so many people who found themselves in intensive care, around 80% were placed into medically induced comas, the damage that was caused as a consequence of that is now abundantly obvious because of the sheer scale of it. And because of that, a lot of research has been done, and which is where we've picked up on the most current medical procedures in order to craft our book.
This is shocking. Before we even talk about the next medical procedures, I do want to ask, do you think that they put COVID patients into medically induced coma because they needed to be intubated and they needed to calm the person down enough to do that?
Yeah, because most doctors and nurses will tell you that no patient can tolerate having a giant tube down their throat when they're placed on a mechanical ventilator. They will fight the vent. This is true. However, it is not true that people cannot cope with the mechanical ventilator whilst conscious. I've spoken to a large number of doctors and nurses who perform this as a matter of course. It is a straightforward procedure. You talk to the patient beforehand. You reassure the patient. You say, we have the best possible equipment here. What we're going to do, this machine will breathe for you. We're going to put you to sleep for a few minutes, and then you'll come around gently. And when they come round, ideally you've got a loved one beside them holding their hand. And as they come to, okay, it's a bit of a shock, but you've got a bit of medication just to keep them calm. And if you think that, you know, since we've been talking, we've not bothered to think about our rate of breath. Well, no one does, generally. But when you come out of a situation like that and you've got the tube down your throat, of course you're going to be thinking about it. But you distract somebody long enough and they get used to it. And the modern ventilators, they're not like old iron lungs where they just pump air in and suck it out. These are all microprocessor controlled. And they enable the patient to initiate the rate of breathing. So whilst, yes, sure, it's uncomfortable having a tube down your throat, but you can easily tolerate it. And because we couldn't get out and about because of COVID, I had a number of doctors send us videos and photographs of the patients they were working with. And there's people sitting up in bed, working on their laptop, on a mechanical ventilator. There's other patients texting their family on their phones, just being quite normal. I was even sent video from Brazil, where patients in intensive care were playing volleyball, admittedly on a small scale, in intensive care, whilst connected to ventilators. But this also goes to demonstrate another key element that's really necessary when people are unwell in hospital, is the problems brought about by immobility. A coma patient could be there for 3 or 4 months, and the only exercise they're getting, if you call it that, is a nurse will flip them over every 2 hours to prevent bed sores. And during that period, muscles are wasting away. It was thought for centuries, thousands of years, in fact, that bed rest, I don't feel well, I'm going to go to bed, was the best thing. It turns out that just 1 week of bed rest can result in the loss of 40% of lean muscle. That's a shocking amount of muscle wastage, but it goes unnoticed because the body is so pumped full of fluids when you're in a coma that often people are carrying around 50 pounds excess weight in fluid, so you can't see the damage. Additionally, joints are calcifying, nerves are disconnecting, there's skeletal damage, and as I mentioned earlier, people have appalling problems with their memory. And that's a consequence of everything I've just listed is a consequence of the hospital treatment that they've acquired. And I use the word acquired because all these conditions are hospital-acquired conditions, not covered by insurance. So hospitals just do not like to talk about it. You had on your show a few weeks ago James Cottrell, the anesthesiologist, and he was saying he's doing research into the damage that these drugs in the operating theatre are causing people. He admitted that they actually don't know how these drugs work, which is totally true. They know that they do, and they don't know the full extent of the damage. Dr. Cotterill said that he's particularly careful when dealing with older and younger patients. Well, you know, in the book, we started a study from 2006 where it looked at people who were having coronary bypass operations that usually last between 4 to 6 hours. And they found that there was significant cognitive decline in around 80 to 90% of patients, including symptoms of confusion, diminished concentration, and loss of short-term memory and of word and face recognition. Now, that's for up to 6 hours. People within coma, who are incidentally receiving the same drugs, and it's worth pointing out that you're receiving the same drugs in coma, more or less, depending on availability, as you are in the operating theatre. So in the operating theatre, you're actually in a coma for 4 to 6 hours. But if you're in one for 4 to 6 weeks, or 3 months, or what have you, those drugs are in your system, and they're not being processed as they would ordinarily, because your brain is offline, which effectively it is. You do not have the luxury of going through your circadian rhythms, which means your kidneys, for example, don't go through their 24-hour cycle. They cannot expel toxins and all the other matter that's in your system. So it floats around, and presumably it adds up to this 50 pounds extra weight in fluids.
This is so overwhelming to think about, really. And I'm still, I actually am thinking, in my yoga studies, they say that the human breathes, on average, 21,600 times per day. And I cannot imagine breathing 21,000 times, having a tube down my throat, and me somehow being able to keep moving around. But I'm like sort of gripping with the idea that people do move around and are able to handle that because my immediate thought would be put me in the coma. But then listening to what you're saying is like, no, don't put me. I mean, it's a very scary conversation, to be honest, because somebody that's listening right now might find themselves in a particular similar situation. And if you have any say-so, which way would you go with it? I mean, if you were awake and they did this, would they put you on Valium or some sort of sedative, but you could stay awake? I'm so curious just from this part.
I mean, what they tend to do in the hospitals that are working on the up-to-date practices, which clearly say do not sedate people, other than the examples I gave earlier, do not sedate them over a prolonged period. If you're going to do it, keep bringing them around, and don't let them go so deep into coma. But none of this is ever explained to anybody. When you go into a hospital, they will say to a patient or to their family, we're going to have to place your loved one into a medically induced coma. And they use the word sleep. The word coma itself comes from an ancient Greek word meaning deep sleep. So from the get-go, everyone's thinking sleep, this is sleep. But it's abundantly obvious that if you switch the brain off, which is effectively what is happening, the brain does not go through the circadian rhythms. It therefore does not experience REM sleep. And this is quite a shock, really, that people within coma who are supposed to be having the deepest restorative form of sleep are actually getting no sleep at all. They are sleep deprived. And 3 days of sleep debt can result in terrible damage. It certainly will tip most people over the edge at that moment. When, if you look at it this way, the medical world cannot carry out ethically investigations into dangerously long periods without sleep. Just can't be done. The military, on the other hand, have no such qualms. And in certain American prisons, such as Abu Ghraib, for example, Guantanamo, they subjected prisoners to the frequent flyer program, where they were kept awake for 3 weeks at a time. When these have subsequently come to court, the medical evidence has shown that these people, through 3 weeks' lack of sleep, suffered significant brain damage, cognitive harm, and that the courts ruled that if this was done intentionally, it is torture. And yet doctors and nurses do it every day with the best will in the world, thinking they're making people sleep. But if you just stop and think about it for a moment, you switch the brain off. It can't sleep. And when people come back from these events, and they from a coma, often they're recounting events that they have experienced. And you know, you've had people talk about the near-death experience. And they will regularly say that it was more real than reality. And this is what coma survivors will tell you. And the range of things they experience within a coma, when it's supposed to be a blank, are mind-boggling. When originally we began this project, I was allowed to monitor a Facebook group, the Coma Survivors Group, and I could see what people were posting. Almost all of them, it seemed, were posting about what they called nightmares within their coma. Can't dream, can't have a nightmare. They were experiencing things that are so dark, so strange, so off the register, so impossible to imagine in the human mind, and yet experiencing them in clear consciousness, that when they come out of their coma and they try and explain this to someone, they're just dismissed as being mentally ill. And other people within comas are having near-death experiences. All the key elements of the near-death experience, you know, the beautiful countryside, stairway to heaven, meeting dead relatives, whatever, all of those things have been related to me by coma survivors, so they're clearly having a near-death experience. And yet this is treated as an hallucination or a false memory. Other people within coma are experiencing alternate lives. Now, this took me a while to get my head around this, but I'll give you an example of Nick, who's in the book. He spent 2 weeks in a coma because he had pneumonia, which incidentally is not a reason to put someone into a coma. And during the 2 weeks he was under, he experienced an alternate life spanning 2 decades at least, set in the 1960s and 70s in the American Midwest. During this time, he got called up and had to serve in an alternate Southeast Asian war. And when you talk to him about it, he would talk about all sorts of tiny details, such as his fingers and his toes were always wrinkly because he was always wet, he was always in the rain. This level of detail. So, and then Nick comes out of his coma, and, or let's just say this, there he is having a life, he's got a partner, he's just given birth to a baby girl, and he seems to have a heart attack, collapses. When he opens his eyes, he's in a hospital room, and there's all these people so happy to see him, and he hasn't got a clue who they are. And they're calling him Nick, and he doesn't think that's his name. He can't speak because of damaged vocal cords caused by the ventilator. Maybe you can't speak for up to 2 weeks or more. So he can't say to these people, hey guys, I think you're in the wrong room, because they're as pleased as a punch to be there, holding his hand, crying and with joy that he's back. And he doesn't recognize these people. His partner was back in this other world, along with his daughter. And he has to adjust to this. And for a lot of people, particularly when you can't speak, and no one will take on board anything that you're trying to indicate as in, I shouldn't be in this world. You're suffering because of the drugs they've given you, because of the illness that put you in the coma in the first place. But what you're really suffering from is that your mind has taken you to other levels of reality that are simply not understood.
This is unbelievable. I want to pick up exactly where we're leaving off. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but don't worry. We have Alan Pierce on the line with us. He is the author of the book Coma, and we will be right back.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure, from outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscles' emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscles' emotion, then get Emily A. Francis' book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, The Body Heals Itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself now.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. If you're new to the show and you're listening for the first time because you love our guest, Alan Pierce, allow me to introduce myself. I'm Emily Francis, and I've been hosting this show for 6 years. Please reach out to me if there is conversations or people that I should be having and who with on the show. I'm very happy and open to meet people that you want me to meet. All right, Alan Pierce is a journalist, broadcaster, former BBC correspondent, and author of several books. He has contributed to numerous publications from Time Magazine to the Sunday Times of London. He lives in France, and he and his wife, Beverly Pierce, former private investigator, are the author of the book Coma and Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. Alan, before we jump back in, where can people buy your book?
You can buy the book wherever you like to buy books. I always say, if you have a bricks-and-mortar bookstore, go and buy it there. If it's not in stock, they get it within 2 days, which is the same as Amazon anyway. And then you can also tell them about the book, and they can tell other people about the book. Much better to do it that way. But you can buy the book absolutely anywhere online, and there's also coming soon an audio book.
God, please tell me that you're the narrator.
No, actually, I'm not. You're the second person to say this to me recently. I don't have those skills. That's a real special skill. I used to work in broadcasting, and I can do certain things, and there's certain things I can't do. I can't read the news with any authority whatsoever. However, I can do a late-night show or something like that. I can't do a book. I mean, I'd just be the worst of it. I really would.
That's amazing, because your voice is stellar. It's so beautiful. I actually just narrated my own book this year for the first time. I have 6 books out, and the last book was Finally Me. And it was so much harder than I thought, but I'm really glad I did it, because I wanted people to hear the book the way that I wanted them to hear it. And you can't necessarily put that. There's some great readers out there, but this one needed to come from me. So I get it, though. But I hope when you do the next book, you consider narrating, because your voice is really soothing, beautiful,
there
and especially a conversation about
book.
This.
Yeah, we talked
okay.
over each other.
Let's jump back in, because what you were telling me about Nick, I first want to say he was living in an alternate reality, which clearly was a past life. And people, when they come out of something like this, you just assume that they're mentally ill or crazy, or they had crazy dreams that they couldn't get over, and I don't believe that. So I would personally go seeking a Native American person to do some conscious extract. I would look for soul recovery and extraction so that I could help myself get back on one life, but not miss and not forget what I saw and what I was part of, because there's such a depth to the soul. And we like to declare what we've decided is and is not real, or is not within our religious confines. And so we miss the possibilities that are really out there because people freak out. But I love that you're a journalist. And I read your bio this time because I wanted people to really listen, that you're not just off the wall having this conversation. You are a journalist, and you are an incredibly well-established and celebrated journalist and writer. And your book is by Simon & Schuster. Anybody that writes books knows that Simon & Schuster is one of the biggest publishers in the world. They would never pick it up if it wasn't based on absolute fact and research. So I want to put that to the side, because I know that people have mixed feelings with this.
People have mixed feelings. There are. I mean, if you look at it this way, every doctor and every nurse, particularly those working in intensive care, which is in many ways like the special forces of medicine, you know, the sharp pointy end, you know, where all the drama is. The people that have been working there, let's put it this way. In recent years, prior to COVID, a number of doctors and nurses were waking up to the notion that they were harming their patients. It is exceptionally rare for a doctor or nurse to follow a patient from ICU back home. Conventional critical care medicine has become a conveyor belt of care, where everyone's so busy, no one gets to look over their shoulder at the product coming off the other end. They just simply do not see the damage that they're causing. And they're doing everything they're doing with the best will in the world. What happened was COVID came along, a few people were waking up to this notion, they were changing their practices, not putting people into comas, keeping people awake, invested in their own recovery, being mobile within the hospital. and then COVID struck. An awful lot of professional ICU staff burnt out because of the sheer rate of patients pouring in upon them. They just simply could not cope. Also, no one had been trained for COVID-19. They could compare it to other things such as acute respiratory distress syndrome, ARDS, which is invariably fatal. So what they do with ARDS patients is they just try and make them comfortable as best they can before they leave us. So they put them on a mechanical ventilator and they are oxygenating well. You sedate them, they appear nice and calm. They thought, this is the best thing we can do. Doctors and nurses around the world were on social media talking to colleagues all over the planet and saying, how the heck are you dealing with this? And this is what everyone came up with. So they just knocked everyone out. And the people who knew what the damage that could be caused by knocking people out were being told by the hospital administration, you just got to do this, that went against everything they wanted to do. They had terrible moral dilemmas, many of them. And then people just burnt out. And then what happened next was they built all these brand new intensive care units to take in all the new patients. They drafted people in from pediatrics and elsewhere in the hospital who didn't have the first clue. And you've got the hospital system saying, all we can come up with is knock them out. If they survive, all well and good, move them on down the line, move in the next one. And that's what everyone did. And the really sad thing about that is the medical system has not recovered from COVID. Hospitals are cash-strapped. They are remarkably short on specialists, doctors and nurses and other clinicians. And they think the most expedient thing to do when the patient enters intensive care, and during COVID, it was 80% of people placed into comas. Today, it's, again, similar to that. People have been placed into comas, I've read one today, because their father had a heart attack. There's not a reason for anyone in a coma. And off they go, and they're now stuck in the system where if we, any of us in the Western world were to find ourselves in an intensive care unit, and statistically, we have at least 2 to 3 chances in life of finding ourselves in an intensive care unit, we will get the substandard level of treatment where they will knock us unconscious. We will come out the other end with hospital-acquired conditions, which they will not put their hands up to. They'll move us down the line, and anything that you remember, such as Nick remembering an alternate life, is simply seen as a false memory, an hallucination, or ICU delirium. But it makes no sense, because why would you have a false memory that gives you a life spanning 20-plus years with a and all the rest of it? It would make no sense. You cannot hallucinate in a coma, because that's a conscious condition, and so is delirium. So their answers are nonsense.
Oh, my God, I love this. Okay, we've got to take another quick commercial break, but don't worry. We're going to pick up right here, right where we're leaving off. We have Alan Pierce on the line, author of Coma and Near-Death Experience. We'll be right back.
Trauma or joy, shame or happiness, guilt or empowerment. Let Emily's new book, Healing Ourselves Whole, be the bridge to help you release negative emotions to help you heal on every level to create more joy, more health, and more vitality. Our body knows what we might forget. It's time to rearrange your inner conversation into spectacular health and happiness, and Healing Ourselves Whole is your step-by-step guide. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com and buy Healing Ourselves Whole at Amazon.com now.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing. Create your own path to physical, emotional, energetic, and spiritual wellness can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscle's emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscle's emotion, then get Emily A. Francis's book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, the body heals itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself Now.
The Bright Side of Talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. Please go and buy the book, Coma and Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious by Alan and Beverly Pierce. This book is available around the world, wherever books are sold, brick-and-mortar stores and online. Let's jump right in. You said The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. Let's talk about the spectrum of experiences that you have found in your research of when people are in medically induced comas, please.
Yeah, they really vary. There's no two that are ever the same, and often because some are beautiful and some are ghastly, people look for answers elsewhere and think perhaps their life prior to this was in some sense ghastly. I'll give you one example, Deborah. And she was a very, very bright, bubbly girl, worked in accounts management, and contracted early. She got COVID early on, so early that they weren't testing for COVID, but she had all the symptoms. And the doctor told her husband, Adam, that she will not survive the night. Now, she's coming from a very happy life. She's got a really good job. She's been married 3 years, loves her husband to bits. Everything's going well. Inside her coma, she wakes up, and this is interesting. People often, when they're telling me about their coma experiences, say, I woke up within my coma, in the same way that you and I might wake up if we fell asleep on the sofa and then be back into this consciousness with complete clarity to our consciousness. Deborah wakes up in an organ harvesting facility, and they are doing all sorts of terrible, terrible things to her. And one event follows another event follows another event. And what often happens is when you're in a hospital, they're sedating you, that the events around you weave themselves into your changed reality, and that the kind and caring doctors and nurses become evil, sadistic devils. And one of these nurses leans forward to Deborah and says, would you like a job? Because you can't do anything, and I'm opening a bar, and I need people to lie still. It's a serial killer-themed bar. And Deborah found herself, and she could count the days off virtually, that she was in there for 80 years, every night in front of a paying audience. Initially, it was actors would come in and reenact like classic murders like Jack the Ripper or whatever on Deborah. And eventually, it got so popular, there was change of management and all sorts, and they started hiring real sex criminals released from prison, rapists, murderers even, and they would enact their crimes on Deborah. And she fell pregnant 3 times, gave birth 3 times, and eventually they said to her, we're going to have to close the bar, it's been open 80 years, and we don't know what to do with you. So they sold her to an organ harvesting facility, which is where we came in. And she was put into a tank of fluid, and she just watched the body dissolve. Now, when you come out of that, and how do you tell anyone this? And it had all the clarity of our waking reality. Everything about that was real. All the pain, all the suffering, all the smells that she could relate to the bar and to things that happened to her within that bar. And If you try and tell the doctor, they're going to give you at best some antipsychotics. No one's going to take you seriously. No one can even begin to explain what's happened to you. No doctor can explain our current level of consciousness. And when they push people to the very, very depths of consciousness, and they come back with stories that would blow your mind, like Deborah's, they have no idea what to say. So they just dismiss them. And they say, false memory. What would that be, a false memory? Or they say, that's an hallucination. To hallucinate, you verbally need your eyes open. So that makes no sense. And there's poor Deborah, doesn't know what to do. She can't talk to anyone for at least 2 weeks because of the damage to her vocal cords. She's exceptionally lucky that her husband Adam was so kind and caring. But now, she says, she's in a plot of the invasion of the body snatchers. She barely remembers her life before coma. Everything she knows about her life before coma is what people have told her now. And she believes, she feels, that she's acting a role. She's acting the role of Deborah, the wife, to Adam, the husband, but doesn't feel like she's that person at all. And this is not uncommon.
I mean, this reminds me of the movie The Vow. I mean, it's you know, she never regained her memory and basically fell back in love with the husband, but went back to the old boyfriend. And, you know, everybody suffers from this. So let's do the natural question is, what advice, now that you know what you know, what advice would you give to both? So this is a two question, so whichever way you want to go with it. What advice would you give to the doctors? What would you give to the people that woke up and feel really like they don't fit in their life anymore?
I guess I've got one answer to that, and that's why I'm here, which is read the book. Because the book is designed, it's designed for a general audience, because, as I say, statistically, it can happen to any one of us. It's designed where it's hoped that doctors and nurses and people working in the medical system just generally can understand what people are experiencing within coma, and when they come out of coma, all the ailments that they've got, put your hands up and admit that these are hospital-acquired conditions, because they truly are. This is easy to prove. For the coma survivors, now, I think the book's a really, really easy read. In fact, it's a, you know, a tour de force into some of the strangest realms of the imagination. But I think an awful lot of coma survivors will find this very hard going at first, because supposing you were placed into a medically induced coma because you had COVID-19, and the medical literature doesn't say do that. In fact, it says if you've got a condition like that, stay awake, be mobile, be conscious, interact with other human beings. You will get better that way. I definitely want coma survivors to read it, but I think they're going to find that a little uncomfortable. But it's also, everything that they've been told, as in, you had a false memory, suddenly I'm giving you explanations as to what did happen to you, what the triggers for those events were that doctors and nurses do not understand, and suddenly you've got a name for your pain. So I think you're going to feel a whole lot better within yourself for that. Also, the book will enable you to join in with other coma survivors and share your experiences, because only a small percentage, is hard to gauge, only a small percentage have found other coma survivors in which to share their stories. The majority of people that come out of this, they've got, you know, huge problems with their memory, they've got terrible aches and pains, and they're told that, oh, the memory thing, don't worry about it, everyone gets that, you'll get better, it will go away. And when it doesn't go away, they see a different doctor, and that other doctor says, sorry to tell you, but you've got early onset dementia. You, in some terrible way, accept this. And they think, because you've experienced something like Deborah or something like Nick, that these were more real than this reality, therefore I have gone mad. And you've got no one to share this with at all. So there's two groups of people. One, a group who's got no one. No one. Others who've got other coma survivors to share their accounts with. And the book will just show them what they've been through and what they're continuing to suffer through and why.
All right, we have one more segment, Emily's Energy Corner, and we're keeping Alan on with us because I cannot let you go so early. So we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
If you have low vision or are blind, then listen up. There's now high visibility trendy sports clothing available just for you. At AwareWolfGear.com, you'll find attractive, stretchy, warm hoodies, headgear, leggings, even kids' wear to fit the duality of blindness, the need to be seen without drawing needless attention. Check out these trendy clothes for yourself or for someone you know at AwareWolfGear.com. That's AwareWolfGear.com. AwareWolfGear.com.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. It's that time. It's Emily's Energy Corner, which doesn't really change the method of this show, except that sometimes I speak by myself, off the cuff, and today I'm not going to do that because Alan Pierce is on the line with us, and it's just way too interesting for me to do that. So he wrote the book Coma and Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. First of all, we can buy the book wherever books are sold. Alan, I would like to ask you, if anybody is listening to this and they need support, what's the best support group that you would recommend to them to reach out to?
Facebook. There's a group called the Coma Survivors Group. It's run by the admin is Andrew. Excuse me, I'm the cough. They are just so kind and welcoming. And a number of their members helped us with the book. We have something like 20-plus coma survivors who've taken our hand, effectively, and taken us through the various stages of coma and corrected us where we're wrong, and we've shared what we've learned with them.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask the other question. So this is my big question, because I don't want to miss this part for the Energy Corner. There were people that had harrowing, absolutely harrowing experiences. Other people who went back in time into what is very potentially a past life, vivid, way too vivid in detail to just be your makeup and your dreaming. What are some of the most brilliant and beautiful experiences that you heard from some of these people?
They vary. They all vary. If you take one example of Isabel. Isabel was also in an organ harvesting facility for 4 years. And during this time, she can count things. She said they removed her uterus 7 times. And she just suffered so badly within her coma that she just, because she was in this organ harvesting facility, they were harvesting her, killing her, bringing her back to life, and so on and so forth. And she just had enough and she wanted to die. And she found herself, she said, death was the most beautiful experience. She found herself in a field. It was a beautiful summer's day. It was long green grass blowing in the wind. She could hear a horse neighing in the background. She walked on. There was a lake with like weeping willow trees around it. And then she found this wooden, gnarled staircase going up into the sky. And she knew that at the bottom where she was death. It was life. And as she climbed to the top, it was death. And she just needed the release. She had to get away from this organ harvesting facility. And she climbed up those steps, and she was 4 steps from the top when she heard her name called. Isabel, Isabel, you must come back. She told me, I was so pissed off. I stomped back down those stairs. I was so angry. I'd never been so happy or content or felt more at ease in all my life as that moment. But she had to come back and find her way back and then come out of the coma and then be in a total mess for so long. And she, bizarrely, was a medical professional. She actually worked in intensive care. She would book the anaesthetists and so on. And so she went back to tell the people in her ICU what she'd experienced. And they were dumbfounded, or they were just a bit blank, really. They were like, oh, yeah? Really? Oh, that's interesting. And just nobody wanted to know about it. And she's trying to relate all these events within coma being more real than reality. And they just think she's nuts. Absolutely nuts. And now she doesn't feel like she fits back into that world.
That actually happens, too, when people are very sick. And then they come back. Even if they didn't have an incredible experience, they don't fit into that world anymore. But I have met people... I did years of clinical massage therapy, and I worked on people that were post-cancer. So I somehow did get to hear quite a few people that had near-death experiences, and I think people just chose to share those stories with me because they could feel it through my touch that I would be incredibly non-judging to their experience.
Yeah.
And not decide to tell them that this is a figment of their imagination when I don't believe that. What I did find is so many people that had the near-death did not want to come back. Absolutely
no.
Did not.
No.
And I find that comforting, really, personally.
Utterly. Utterly. And so many that had the beautiful experience. For many, it was a mixture, the horror and then the beauty. For the people that finished on beauty before they came back, they've no fear of death. They know exactly where they're going. You know, they've got things to do, so they're busy for the minute. But when their time is ready, they're ready for it. Others who've had the most horrendous experiences within their coma, who had nothing nice to say, now can't bear to go to sleep at night because their dreams have become so ultra vivid. The detail of their dreams, and a lot of coma people report this, even the ones that have nice experiences. But when you've been in the depths of hell, when you shut your eyes at night and you go to bed, you're back there. So you will fight tooth and nail to avoid sleep. And that, again, has terrible knock-ons. So, yeah, some people get the best out of this, the most beautiful, beautiful, life-changing experiences from this. And others are just left shadows of their former selves.
And I think that kind of experience is such a dream. And people are very blessed to have that. In fact, we had a person on this show, Nancy Rhines, who had a near-death experience. She was clinically dead for several minutes and was run over and underneath the car and had a horrific experience, but the experience of being on the other side was so beautiful that she's doing exactly what you're talking about. She's painting and doing art. She came back with a lot of psychic abilities, and that leads to my other question. Did you meet anybody that came back from a coma experience with newfound psychic intuitive gifts at all?
Okay, we were talking about Nick earlier. In this world, he runs his own pizza parlor, not a franchise, his own pizza parlor. In his coma world, he taught people how to garden. His father was a big-time motorcycle mechanic, and he could fix anything. He could turn his hand to anything. The Nick in this world wouldn't even know how to change a light bulb. If a plug needed a fuse changing, he'd call an electrician. Now, Nick has come back, and he would tackle these tasks himself. He told me he's fixed his car twice. He's fixed the neighbor's lawnmower. He fixed his heating and ventilating system, and he's working on other projects. He doesn't automatically know how to fix them, but he's attuned to finding out how to fix them. And that's a complete flip in terms of how he was before the coma event. And this sort of thing is, I wouldn't say, I mean, any of this is common, but people are coming back from comas recounting various things that they have learned. I've come across people saying that they've heard people come out speaking other languages, for example, couldn't pin one down. So we didn't go down that path. But Nick's case, yes, it's real interest in fixing things, particularly his car. And he never had any interest before. So he's brought that one back from an earlier life.
I love that. I love knowing that there's so much more out there in the world and that it is possible to find out what it is while we're still here and living. Alan Pierce, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show, and I look forward to you coming back and visiting us soon. Thank you for being here.
Oh,
and
Emily,
those of you that are listening,
thank you so much.
Make it a great week. Thank you so much.
Emily A. Francis offers you a unique approach to healing that works directly within the memory systems of your body. Healing Ourselves Whole is a groundbreaking interactive book containing everything you need to clean your emotional house from top to bottom, including journal prompts and audio meditations, all to help you dig deep into your past, change the dialogue, and let go of the pain and trauma to have a joyful and fully empowered life. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com and buy Healing Ourselves Whole at Amazon.com now.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.